Board Game Bros. Hello, listeners.
Hi.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games. Were you going to say something at the end of that?
I was going to say that was a pretty appropriately ominous key you chose for our intro there.
Right, because this is our podcast where we talk about board games, and it's a regularly scheduled episode. Well, we're going to pick one board game, and we're going to talk about how to play it, some of the strategies in the game, and we're going to talk about how the game was designed. And yes, indeed, the ominous tone of the intro song is appropriate, because what game are we talking about today, Matthew?
We are talking about Fury of Dracula, specifically the third and fourth edition. This is designed by Frank Brooks, Stephen Hand, and Kevin Wilson. Though, I guess I should probably say Stephen Hand, Kevin Wilson, and Frank Brooks, because the first edition, published in 1987 by Games Workshop, was only designed by Stephen Hand. Kevin Wilson was added to the second edition, and then Frank Brooks onto the third and fourth, which was published in 2015 by WizKids.
Gotcha.
So that's a little fun. Also, this was a listener requested episode.
Right. If we had videos, it would also be a viewer.
Right.
I guess. But yes, a listener requested that we check out this game, so we did.
Yeah. And so, yeah, let's talk about what Fury of Dracula is.
All right. So for a short description of what Fury of Dracula is, in Fury of Dracula, four players play as vampire hunters attempting to track down and defeat Dracula, and one player plays as Dracula, who moves secretly around Europe and tries to gain influence. The hunters act first during a day and a night phase. During each phase, they perform a single action which could entail moving, either by road or by train, collecting train tickets, acquiring items, clearing encounters on Dracula's trail, and resting. Then at the end of the night, Dracula moves secretly by road by playing location cards face down in a trail and places a face down encounter on his new location. Whenever a hunter ends their movement in a town on Dracula's trail, it is revealed, and Dracula has the option of activating the encounter on that location to deter the hunter. Once the hunters narrow down where Dracula is headed and finally encounter him, they battle. If Dracula takes 15 damage, he is defeated and the hunters win. If Dracula gets 13 influence points from defeating hunters and maturing encounters on his trail, which we'll talk about in a second, then Dracula is victorious. So that is a short description of Fury of Dracula, the board game. Yeah. So let's get into a little bit greater detail exactly how the game is played. And along with that, let's talk a little bit about strategies.
Yeah.
So I guess the first thing to go into is to be a little bit more specific about how Dracula works, because I think the hunters are pretty straightforward. There's a large board with a map on it of Europe. And then all these cities are different locations on the board, and they're all connected by roads and by train tracks.
And sometimes by seaports.
Right, because there is also the seas that surround Europe that you and Dracula can move to. And it's on the player's turn. During the day phase, they have the option to move to an adjacent city or to move by spending a train ticket, which will tell you how many train tracks you can travel along to get to a further city. And then they have the option of either in day or night phase doing something without moving, which could entail like collecting resources like items or resting or investigating that location in case there's an encounter there that Dracula has decided not to reveal. So that's pretty straightforward. But Dracula's movement is different. So how does Dracula work?
Well, so on Dracula's turn of every round, Dracula places a card face down on the trail, which is a series of five cards, each representing a location. These cards are called hideouts because it's sort of like where Dracula's hiding out. And each location is one of the cities on the board or one of the seas. And the first turn you place a location, it can be anywhere, I believe, except for the sea.
I guess in game setup, more like,
yeah,
you can place the first hideout can be anywhere except in the sea or in Dracula's mansion.
Yeah, which is a location.
Right.
But then every turn after that, consecutively, you have to place a location that is connected by road to your current location by one road. So you kind of travel by road only.
Right. You travel by road, city by city.
Right. There are some...
You can't jump around.
There are some caveats to this. One is that you can go from port to sea or sea to sea. When you go from port to sea, you take 2 damage, and Dracula's health is 15. If it reaches 0, he dies. And then if you move from sea to sea, you take 1 damage.
And I think this is based on the vampire mythology that, like, moving water is bad for vampires.
Yeah. I'm sure there's, like, a classical interpretation of it like that.
I seem to remember... never mind. It's not important. We'll talk about that maybe later.
And there are a couple cards that I believe are called power cards, which have the same card back as a location card.
Well, actually, only the hide card has the same card back. The rest have unique card backs because they're played face up.
Right. So the way these work is, instead of placing a location, you can place one of these powers, and each one does a different effect that modifies what you do for the turn or how you move. Most of them actually prevent you from moving and give you an effect. Like, one of them lets you heal 3 damage, but you don't move for that turn. You stay in the same city. Hide is one that you place face down, and it doesn't move you anywhere. It just looks like you did because it's face down. And then there's also one that lets you move 2 roads for that turn, and you place a new location card on top of that.
Right.
Yeah. And every round, when you place a new card, the rest of them get pushed along the trail. There are 6 slots for these cards, I believe.
Yeah.
And when it reaches the end, then you can mature what's on that location.
Right. And so we mentioned that. One thing is important is, after you play the location, the second part of Dracula's turn is they play an encounter card face down on the location.
Right.
And then, yeah, so then that location will move along the trail, because the first place you go to after your second turn, or on your second turn, that place will slide 1 space down, and then a new card will be placed to show your current location. By the way, you have a Dracula figurine that, instead of being on the board on the cities that you're visiting, it is off to the side in a little city shaped space above the first card on the trail to show, like, this is where you are. So cards will slide along the trail. And when a card that has a face down encounter slides off of the trail, then you have the option of maturing that encounter. Sometimes this means just performing a small effect that affects the hunters, like dealing damage to them or revealing their hands of cards to you. If you mature a vampire card, then you can gain influence points. And there's 3 kinds of vampire cards, and depending on which kind you mature, you will gain a different number of points. But these points are how Dracula wins.
Right.
It's important to mature vampire cards if you are Dracula.
Right. That's one way Dracula gets points, though.
Right.
I was going to say, the other main way is by fighting and defeating the hunters in combat.
Right. The maturing vampires on the trail is the safest way of earning points. But defeating hunters in combat is the quickest way of earning points.
Right. Do you want to go into combat?
Right. So first of all, if like we said in the description, if a hunter ends their movement on a city that is in the trail. And we say end your movement, because there's some effects in the game that will push hunters further after they've decided to stop moving. There's some effects that cause hunters to skip cities. So they have to end their movement on a space with a card on the trail. So if they end on the trail, you will flip that card face up. And if it happens to be the space that Dracula is on, then Dracula flips over the card and places their miniature on the city where they have just been found. Dracula also has the option of revealing himself by walking into the same city as another, as a vampire hunter. So when Dracula is in the same city as a hunter, there are two small, like, half phases in between, before the beginning of daytime and between day and nighttime, called dawn and dusk. And these are the points in time when you fight hunters, when hunters fight Dracula. So during either time, if Dracula is in the same town as a hunter, they clash in combat. And the way that that works is that Dracula has his own deck of cards, and all these cards have different actions in combat. And then the hunter will have a hand of cards, and the hunter will have three cards by default that are dodge, punch, and escape. And then if they have item cards, then they'll have extra things that they can add to these. So during a round of combat, Dracula will draw five cards from his deck, and the hunter will have their hand of cards, and each one of them will choose one card and place it face down. And then when both of them are selected, they flip them face up. And then there's a sort of process that you have to go through to resolve the cards. So the first thing is that Dracula's card will have a suit on it. And I think there's like six or seven suits that Dracula's card could have. And then the hunter's card will have a number of suits, somewhere between like two and four suits on it. If a suit on the hunter's card matches the suit on Dracula's card, Dracula's card is canceled, and then the hunter's card resolves. If they don't have a matching suit, then Dracula's card resolves first, and potentially Dracula's card will cancel out the hunter's card. If it does not, then after Dracula's card resolves, the hunter's card will resolve. And typical effects for cards are to counter other cards or to deal damage to the opponent. And in Dracula's case, they have some abilities to reduce damage on future turns, search the deck of cards for other cards that they want to try and play in that combat. So after the process is finished on determining which cards resolve and what they do, then Dracula will draw a new card to replace the one he played, and the hunter will return the card they played to their hand. So Dracula's cards are constantly changing in their hand. The hunter is just constantly dealing with the same number of cards, the same tools at their disposal. So combat can end in a number of ways. One way that combat can end is one of the participants is defeated. If Dracula is defeated, that means he has lost and the hunters win. If the hunters are defeated, then they are sent to a hospital on the map, whatever closest hospital there is. And there's certain cities that have little icons next to them that show that they have hospitals in them. The combat can also end if Dracula plays six combat cards. So essentially, if Dracula can stick it out for six turns, then combat will end after that. And then there's a number of cards that both Dracula and the hunter have, specifically the hunter has escape, that will remove them from combat and therefore end the combat in most cases.
Right. Now, it is important to note that Dracula can also end the combat by giving the hunter a bite, specifically right. By playing the Fangs card after playing the Mesmerize card. And mm-hmm. Bites are special. Each character has room for one bite on their like character board, except mm-hmm. for I believe Dr. Seward, who has two bites.
I thought it was Van Helsing.
Maybe.
I think Van Helsing has the bites because Dr. Seward has the higher hand size.
Right. But then Mina Harker starts the game with one bite.
Right.
And
bites, I think she has one bite always.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
And bites, for one thing, if you need to place a bite on a hunter and they have no more space on their board, then they're knocked out and sent to the hospital. Mm-hmm. But also, if they have a bite, they have to reveal one item and event card in their hand at all times. So it gives Dracula some more information. So when Dracula knocks out a hunter, Dracula automatically gets two influence points. And depending on how long the game has gone, he can get more up to 3 extra points.
Right.
This is because the game is played in a series of weeks, with the day and night cycle being a you know, day of the week.
Right.
And then every time it goes back from Sunday to Monday, you add this little, I can't remember what they're called. They're like a little wedge.
I think they're like doom counters or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. And there's 3 of them. And each one that's added adds an extra influence point when you knock out a hunter. And if all 3 are on the board, then every time Dracula plays a hideout, he gets 3 influence points.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a timer.
Point gain ramps up for Dracula
as
the game goes on. There's one important thing to know about combat, and that is that multiple people can participate in it. So if during dawn or dusk, multiple hunters are in the same city as Dracula, then they will all enter the combat together. And in that case, when Dracula is supposed to, or before the cards are revealed, Dracula gets to choose which hunter they are sort of clashing against, and for the purposes of determining whether his card is canceled by the suits on the hunter's card, and which hunter his card specifically affects, because Dracula's cards will typically only reference a single hunter. So Dracula will pick one hunter to clash against, but when it comes to the hunter's cards and their activation, every hunter in the combat cards will activate unless Dracula canceled the one hunter that he was up against. So essentially, that means that it is much easier to fight Dracula in a group, because because if Dracula manages to cancel one card, that's not the end of the turn for the hunters. All the other hunters still get to use their cards, which will, you know, deal damage to Dracula typically.
Right. Not to mention that the Mesmerize card, which reduces the damage that a hunter deals to Dracula with weapons by 1, only works for the one hunter you use it on.
Right. And it only works for the one hunter you use it on in purposes of inflicting a bite wound. So. Yeah. So, yes, it is way safer to fight Dracula in a group than it is on your own.
Here's our first strategy nugget, If you're a hunter and you want to win, then get together with your other hunters.
Mm-hmm. We've played this.
If you're low game on health, then try to stick near your other hunters.
Right. We've played this game twice now, and I think both times we won, or both times the game ended because that hinged around this strategy, because the first time we played, Dracula was defeated because he was locked into a combat against 3 opponents, and he entered that combat with like around 1/3 of his health lost, so he still had 2/3 of his health, but he was wiped out by the end of that combat.
Yeah.
Then in the next game we played, Dracula won because they were able to consistently manage their encounters with the hunters in 1v1s.
Yeah.
So they were able to keep the rest of the hunters at bay and maneuver to tricky locations where only one hunter could access them at a time. And then deliberately they engaged in combat and defeated a single hunter twice.
I was playing Dracula that game. I even stayed in one location using a power card just so I could fight in the next dawn phase.
Right.
Yeah. Right,
you fought at dusk, and then it went to night phase, and you can't move at night, so the hunter was trapped there. And then on your Dracula's turn, instead of moving, you decided just to stick around so that you could fight at dawn as well.
Yeah.
And then I think even then, there was a hunter. I think I had a hunter 1 space away that I was controlling that would have been able to engage you during the next dusk phase after that dawn. But you thankfully had backup in the form of an... What is it called? An event card, I think.
Yeah.
You had backup in an event card that was
Encounters and events. There's an encounter that put fog on a space that one of the other hunters was on.
I'm referencing the event card that pushed me along 1 extra space so that I couldn't end my turn in the same space.
That's right, yeah.
That you and our dad's character were fighting. Right, okay. So event cards are something we haven't talked about, and they are similar to item cards. And you acquire them with the same action.
Right.
But they function a little differently. So let's talk a little bit about item and event cards.
Right. So one of the actions hunters have is to supply. And if they are on a large city, then they will get an item from this regardless of day or night. If they are on a small city, they do not get an item. Now, if they use this during the day, they draw the top card of the event deck. And if it's a hunter event, they keep it. If it's a Dracula event, they discard it. And only hunters will ever have hunter events. Only Dracula will ever have Dracula events. Now, if it's at night and you take the supply action, you draw from the bottom of the event deck. And if it's a Dracula event, Dracula keeps it. And if it's a hunter event, you keep it. Item cards can be traded between hunters on the same city. This is like a separate action than supplying that you can take.
It's a trade action.
Only one hunter, I believe that's Van Helsing, can trade events.
Right.
And importantly, I believe it's that you can't secretly discuss what's in your hand unless you're trading.
Yes. You can't secretly discuss anything unless you're trading. It's in the game's rules that you cannot whisper or pass cards or, you know, peek at cards unless you're trading. And if you're trading, you can whisper and you can show each other your cards and stuff. But yeah, if you're not trading, then everything you say has to be out in the open.
Right. And event cards will have different times that you can play them, either like immediately when you draw it or at dawn, at dusk, etc.
And sometimes, a lot of the time, a card will have, you know, you can play it immediately or you can play it at dawn or at dusk, and when you play it will change what the card does.
Exactly.
So, like, you could play it immediately to see, like, there's an example of a card that says if you play it immediately, you can see the hideout on the third space in the trail. But if you wait and you play it at either dawn or dusk, then you will choose to see the fifth or sixth hideout on the trail. So it's like whatever you need to see, that's when you'll play it.
Yeah.
You take the supply action to get these. Now, item cards, there's two different kinds of item cards. I guess the first is a generic item card, which will just have some added bonus, usually in combat. And they're usually revealed at the beginning of combat to give you those bonuses. And then the other is a weapon card, which will have those suits that are on the punch and dodge and evade cards so that they can be played in combat and they can cancel out Dracula's cards. And weapon cards will typically do a lot more damage than the punch card. Right. They pretty much always do way more damage than a punch card, because a punch card deals one damage.
Yeah. Speaking of, one thing we didn't really mention about the encounters that Dracula puts on the locations is that, so did we mention about ambushing?
I think a little bit, but yeah. we can go into detail now.
So yeah, when a hunter ends their move on a location that has an encounter card, Dracula may ambush them with that encounter card, as long as it says that it can be ambushed, or it doesn't say not. And this means that it will have like an effect that happens immediately, usually to that hunter. The main difference is there are vampires that you can actually fight in combat by being ambushed by them or by searching the city while you're on that location. And these work the same way as the Dracula combats.
Yes.
But it's just to this card instead of Dracula.
Right, and those cards will have their own health, and typically it's around 4 health, I think.
I think there's one with 6.
For a vampire. Yeah.
Yeah.
4 or 6. 4, 2, 6, maybe. Right. So, yeah. And those are the vampires that you, as Dracula, want to mature in order to get those points.
Exactly, yeah.
Typically. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about hunter strategy.
Right.
So to start off the game, I think technically you can start in any city you want. In the first time setup, they have 3 specific cities that you would set the hunters up in, which kind of place them in various spots all around the board, except it puts Mina right next to Van Helsing, which means that on the next turn she can activate her special ability, because each hunter has their own special abilities.
Right.
Mina's is that if she's in the same city as a hunter, she can use an action that will force Dracula to say whether or not they're in the same region of Europe as the two hunters.
Yeah. And this is really important. I think this is honestly the easiest way to get a lead on where Dracula even is.
Right. Although I, thinking over it, like, I think both of the games we've played, we've done this on the first turn and Dracula said no. Now, considering that, I'm actually starting to believe that doing that is a waste of time in an actual playthrough of the game. Because Dracula, I mean, since if you have knowledge of that ability, then you would never start in the region that Mina and Van Helsing start in. Or I think they straddle a region, so you could technically like go over to the other side. So there's two regions possibly that this could happen on in like the first turn. So as Dracula, you would just never start in those regions.
Sure.
Because that's giving away too much information if you say, yes, I'm in that region. So because Dracula would probably never start in those regions because that action is very detrimental to Dracula, it's probably also detrimental to the hunters to even attempt to do it. It's probably a waste of a turn.
That's fair. So I will say in regards to what you want to do during the day,
mm-hmm.
there's a few key things, one of which is, of course, move.
Mm-hmm.
Because the best way to know where Dracula is for sure is to move into a city that was on the trail.
Right.
Because
once you pick up the trail, you can narrow down where Dracula is in like one turn.
Yeah, exactly. And so being able to move and having movement options available is important. Mm-hmm. But I would also say that you really want to get a few good items early game.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like events are hit and miss how powerful they are early game, but as I know, as far as items, there's a lot of like, I mean, obviously getting a weapon is good so that you have something to defend.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you shouldn't try and fight Dracula until you have one weapon.
Yeah.
Because, definitely. I mean, it makes a difference of being able to defeat Dracula in a single combat versus multiple combats.
Yeah.
Because if you can only punch him, that means you can only deal one damage. And if any combat has a maximum of 6 turns to it, then that means it's going to take you a minimum of 3 combats to defeat him if you manage to punch Dracula every turn.
Yeah.
Versus having a pistol, which deals 3 damage if it succeeds. So that changes from one combat to, or from 3 combats to 2 combats minimum, with the possibility of only needing one combat if Dracula has lost at least 3 life already, which they could have lost from just moving through the sea at some point. It really shortens combats, and also it just makes your hand a little more versatile and better at canceling Dracula's cards and being less predictable.
Mm-hmm. I want to bring up an item card called Fast Horses.
Yep.
This is one of the best utility item cards because mm-hmm. it says you may play this instead of or as an action on your turn during daytime. You flip over a ticket in the pool of tickets
mm-hmm.
and you move a number of roads equal to the yellow number on the ticket. Oh, by the way, every railway ticket has 2 numbers, a white and a yellow number. If you're going to move on yellow train tracks, you're going to use the yellow number, which I think is always lower or equal, never higher.
Yes. So the way that tickets, it's a little more than that. It's if you're only going to move on white train tracks, then you use the white number. If you're only going to move on yellow train tracks, use the yellow number. If you're going to move on both kinds of train tracks, then you use the yellow number.
Yeah.
Right. So with Fast Horses, you reveal a ticket from the pile of tickets and move the yellow spaces so that you can potentially move more than one road at a time with Fast Horses. The minimum is 1. So it's just as if you took a normal movement anyways. It's only upside.
Right. It's important to note that there are locations that are inaccessible by railway, not to mention that there are road routes that are faster than railways if you can move 2 roads in 1 turn.
Mm-hmm.
So this is pretty safe to take and helps a lot for sure.
Right. So we're talking a little bit about tickets and how they have these numbers and they let you move further on a turn. I think it's just good form to always have a ticket in your inventory. Characters can have two tickets at any given time. If they acquire more tickets than that, then they discard down to two immediately. Having a ticket is very useful just because once Dracula is known, it's very important that you mobilize to his location as quick as you can so that you can engage him before you lose the trail. Right. And before they're able to mature too many encounters, especially vampire encounters. And it's important to also time your movement so that you are both you are hitting Dracula as a group rather than individually.
Right.
And so that means one person's obviously going to always be closer to Dracula than another person. So that other person has to have a ticket so that they can meet up at the same time. So right. I think it's just good form to always have a ticket. I think probably the best start to the game is to move and then get a ticket. And then from then on, it's probably just moving and supplying.
I was going to say, I think turn one, it's best to get supply during day and then ticket at night. Because it's pretty unlikely that you're going to find any info turn one just because Dracula's only been one place.
Right. And Dracula is probably almost never going to start one city away from a hunter.
Exactly.
Or and two cities away from a hunter.
So it's kind of okay to take like the first 2 days, quote unquote, to just prepare. Because that way you'll have items if you encounter Dracula. And
actually, that makes a ton of sense.
It's literally more likely you'll encounter Dracula.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's important to note by both players that, or by all players, that Dracula cannot go to a location that's currently on the trail until that hideout gets matured and kicked off. So, you can't retrace your steps 6 steps back. So it is like after the third or fourth time, you can rule out a good few places just by knowing where they've already been.
Right. Like England, it's impossible to move a certain number of spaces without eventually having to go into the sea.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's very few locations in England in the game.
Yeah. So, I mean, since having items is important, I think just getting to maximum hand size early on for that is good. And
speaking of which, the max hand size is 3 of each type of card for the hunters, and then 4 of each type for one specific hunter, which I can't remember his name, but he's the doctor.
John Seward.
Dr. John Seward. He can hold 4 of either card. And then Dracula, I believe, can hold 4 Dracula events at any given point.
Yeah.
It's either 3 or 4.
I also want to bring up that I think during nighttime, even if you have 2 railway tickets, it's not bad to reserve another if you don't have anything else to do, because chances are you can get one that's better than what you already have. And if it's worse, you just discard that one.
Sure. Or so, it could be your second ticket.
Yeah. But I mean, if you already have 2 railway tickets and you have nothing else to do at night, I think that's a fine play.
Right. I actually don't mind investigating as long as you're not at your max hand size for items or when I say investigating, I mean supplying.
Yeah.
Right. Because if you're not at your max hand size or if you don't have a weapon yet, it's not the worst thing to supply at night as long as you're in a large city, because you're guaranteed to get an item. And the Dracula event cards can be pesky. But they're not going to break you.
I think they're a lot worse late game, like after week 2.
They're good when Dracula is close to winning.
That's what I mean.
So as long as the hunters are ahead or even on their objectives with Dracula, then there's no harm in doing so. Yeah. And so that means that at early in the game, it's not harmful to investigate a night.
So really,
survey, whatever supply.
Really, then maybe turn one you have 2 hunters, supply both times, both night and day, maybe even 3, and then
maybe
and then the other 1 or 2 can get tickets. Godalming can get two tickets at once, which is really good. I believe it's either you get two at once or it's two and discard one. Either way, Godalming's really good at filtering.
I think it is just straight up two. And Godalming draws two items every time they supply. Godalming's just good at gaining resources.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's talk a little bit about Dracula strategy.
Oh, yeah.
So where do you start as Dracula?
For one thing,
I was thinking about it.
Oh, where do you start, literally? Okay.
Yeah, where do you start?
I thought that was more of a rhetorical.
Because Dracula gets to start anywhere on the board. I mean, I think the hunters, like I said, the hunters get to start anywhere, but for game setup, they suggest you start in four specific cities. Yeah. So we'll just assume you use the setup that's suggested for the hunters. Where should Dracula start?
Yeah. I was a big fan of Milan.
Okay.
So Milan is pretty central, but also it's central to a couple different seas, because Milan to Marseille gets you the Mediterranean. Milan to Genoa gets you to the Tyrrhenian Sea. My bad. Milan to Venice gets you to the Adriatic Sea. And the thing about seas as Dracula is you can cover a lot of distance in only a few seas. Even if you take a few damage, it's okay. Like, you can pretty easily warrant taking four damage from a sea, especially because, for one thing, the Fangs card in combat heals you for two damage, but also one of your powers lets you heal three. So, like,
yeah, I think, you have the tools at your disposal to heal up five damage very quickly.
Yeah, so, like, I think being able to move to the sea in, like, two turns means that even if they catch onto your trail, you can pretty quickly lose them, as long as you're not, like, moving into the Black Sea or the North Sea.
I was thinking it would be pretty good to start in Great Britain, because at first when we played this game, I was thinking, for some reason, I thought it would have been a bad idea to start there, because there's not a lot of space. So, like, oh, if they came there, they would find me immediately. But then I was thinking, like, it actually is really, assuming they use the basic setup, it's really detrimental to move to Great Britain early in the game, because when a hunter moves into the ocean, they can't perform any actions during the night phase if they're in the ocean during the day phase.
And then during the day phase, they have to move out.
They have to move out either into a port or to another sea. But that means that when a hunter's in the sea, they can't take supply actions. They can't take rest actions. They can't take
tickets.
Anything. So they get set back in tempo if they're forced to go into the sea.
Basically, they lose a turn.
So essentially, if you start in Great Britain, you're forcing the hunters to lose a turn in order to go there and pick up on your trail. And then while you're there, you can just take like two or three turns, maybe even four turns to do whatever you want. You could stay there for a good deal of turns before you have to move, because a hunter might be approaching Great Britain.
Yeah,
but then once you leave there, you have a lot of options. There's a lot of seas that you can travel to, so you could travel to like two or three different seas from there, and then each of those seas connects to two or three different ports. So
yeah,
you're not giving much away by starting in Great Britain.
I was gonna say, I have an idea for where you might want to start. That being Edinburgh, because that lets you either go. Well, I mean, one thing, you can open by going Edinburgh, North Sea. You can go Edinburgh, Manchester, Liverpool, Irish Sea, or Edinburgh, Manchester, Liverpool, Swansea, or Edinburgh, Manchester, London, Plymouth. Like, basically what I'm saying is there's a lot of small movements that can be hard to pinpoint which is which. Like, there is a difference between going Edinburgh, Manchester, Liverpool, Irish Sea, or putting Swansea before that.
But four
movements can get you to the English Channel as well.
I want to say that, so I believe you draw, so we mentioned that you put encounter cards on locations as you visit them, on hideouts as you visit them as Dracula. You have a hand of five encounter cards at all times. After you play an encounter card, you draw up to five. And I was just thinking, if you started in Great Britain, if you had vampires in your opening hand of encounter cards, it's probably the best place to start, because I mean, you can drop those and it's going to take people a while to get out that way. And when they do, you know, you might have already matured a vampire by that time.
Right. Then maybe like Liverpool or Dublin is where you want to start, because those are the most furthest inward into Great Britain.
Right. They're not on a port, so they won't be discovered immediately.
They're not on an outside facing port.
Gotcha.
They both face the Irish Sea.
I see. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's probably good to start in like Liverpool or Edinburgh or something in Great Britain as Dracula. That might be one of the more optimal starts. Now it should be said that when you move into the sea as Dracula, the location card has a different, it has a blue card back rather than a red one. So the hunters know that you're in the ocean, rather than on land. Yeah. But, at the beginning of the game, when nobody knows where you are and nobody knows which sea you just went into, it doesn't give away much.
Yeah, I think that's a good early game, like, safe option, mm-hmm. is Great Britain. I still personally like Milan myself, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, I think anything that is one road away from two different ports to two different seas is good. Mm-hmm. Just because, like I said, seas are really good to mix people up, I think.
Yeah. One thing you don't want to do as the Dracula is start in the middle of the map, in yeah. between all of the hunters. Because when I was Dracula in the first playthrough and I lost, I started in a central map. What I thought I was doing was starting at a safe distance from all of the hunters. If I was at the edge of the map, I might have been kind of close to one of the hunters. But turns out that by being in between all the hunters, the hunters just started moving inward, inland, and they didn't pick up on my trail immediately, but soon I was left with very few options because you can't backtrack, so you have to keep moving forward, and that was just pushing me towards like one cluster of hunters.
Right, yeah. And at that point, if all of them are moving inland in like roughly surrounding you, then mm-hmm. they're guaranteed to hit part of your trail at some point.
Right. So the idea is that you don't want to be surrounded. Mm-hmm. You want to be on the outside, maneuvering around the outside. You want to go inside once, probably. I mean, you only want to move inland, I guess, once the hunters are kind of bunched together and there's a very clear area that is separated from the hunters.
Yeah.
This is all assuming that you haven't been found yet.
Exactly.
So Dracula's strategy when you have been found is to isolate hunters and take them out one by one.
Right, yeah. It's a lot more efficient to isolate hunters than it is to try and just run away immediately.
Yeah, you do have options. Like, if you are in combat, there is a card called Escape as Mist that lets you move after the combat ends. And then, assuming that combat occurred at dusk, then after the night phase, you get to move again. So you essentially get two moves in a single turn.
There's also
I was going to say that there's a power card that lets you move two spaces. And then also going into the ocean will, you know, open up a lot of different directions that are hard to predict, that could be relatively far away from where the hunters are if they don't chase you into the ocean.
Yeah.
So there is possibilities, but they can run out, especially because, I mean, you can't backtrack. And if you use the movement power card, which does damage to you, then you can't do it for another seven turns. So once you're caught, you're probably going to be continuously caught in the sights of the hunters.
Exactly. Yeah. And
after that, then you'll have all these tools at your disposal for deterring hunters. And your first instinct might be to deter the hunters that are chasing you down because you're trying to escape again and become hidden again. But really what you should use them for, as we learned in our second playthrough, is for deterring other hunters from entering combat so that you can just fight one hunter.
Exactly, yeah. And we briefly mentioned Fog. This is an encounter card that makes it so the fog tokens are placed on a port city, or no, any city. If it's a port, right. It gets two. If it's not, it gets one. And fog prevents hunters from moving into or out of a city. So, mm-hmm. like, you could, like, if you're on a city with two hunters, or even just one, you can leave, and then on your new space put fog, and then if the hunter chases you there, then they're trapped there and you can move out.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I think, one of the best defensive encounters.
There's also the Thunderstorm card, which I think comes from an event card for Dracula. That will put Thunderstorm tokens on C tiles or C spaces. And they function a lot like fogs, where hunters cannot enter an ocean that has a Thunderstorm token on it. And then every dawn, you remove one of them from the board.
Yeah.
So in the case that maybe you retreat to like Great Britain and one hunter manages to chase you into Great Britain, you can use this card to block off all the seas surrounding Great Britain and preventing other hunters from joining that combat.
Yeah, exactly. Additionally, and then, I would say if you have multiple vampires that like vampire encounters that have health that you can fight, I would save at least one in case this happens, because you can always just use those to try and tack more damage on the hunter,
mm-hmm.
and maybe even kill them from that instead of having to fight them yourself.
Sure.
Because
the hunters don't get anything from fighting them. They're only, preventing you from maturing that card. But you could also think of it that if a hunter gets defeated by a vampire, or if the hunter gets softened up by one of those vampires and then you finish the job, that's essentially the same number of points you would have gotten as if you had scored that vampire, as long as it's sort of later in the game, I guess.
Right. Similar, but usually by the time you need to do this, it will be at least after week one, I've found.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you should at least be able to get like 3 points from that. Also, as Dracula, I want to say if you get the chance, getting an early kill on Mina Harker is really good. Because she's the one that has the bite already, so she's really easy to kill.
And you get more points from defeating someone with bites than you do from defeating in combat, right?
No.
You get, like, bonus points.
No, it's that when you play Fangs, you get a point if they're mesmerized, and then you bite them. So, in a way, it's getting extra points, but not really. It's more so that just, like, this is the most efficient way to kill somebody. And doing this can displace Mina into a hospital, and she loses her items, and it gives you points.
Right.
So, yeah.
The last piece of strategy that I have for Dracula is that if you are found and you're being chased, be sure to finish, start your final showdown with the vampire hunters in a town that does not have a train station, or a town that is not connected by train to other towns, because the hunters are trying to fight you all at the same time, which means they're all going to try and get train tickets so that they can all convene on the same space very quickly, rapidly descend upon you. So as long as you're not on a town that's connected by train to other towns, then you have a better... Yeah, right. There's more turns that certain hunters are going to be fighting you and other hunters are trying to catch up.
Right. A few notable ones are Sarajevo, Zagreb, and Toulouse. Cool. Yeah. All right. That was a pretty lengthy strategy discussion.
Let's talk about design.
Okay. Oh boy.
So a couple good things I want to point out about the design is that the easiest way to earn points as Dracula is also the riskiest way to earn points. And the fastest way to find Dracula as the hunter is the riskiest way to find Dracula. So they do a good balance of risk versus efficiency.
Yeah. Do you mean the fastest way to earn points is the one that is the riskiest?
The fastest way to earn points is to defeat hunters in combat as Dracula. But it's the riskiest because you're putting yourself directly in the line of fire of the hunters, which, is their win condition. The fastest way to find Dracula is to split up and go to separate corners, which is the riskiest because that means you're isolated and it's easier for Dracula to defeat you as a hunter.
Right. It's also true that for the most part, if you analyze who has the upper hand in these exchanges, you're looking at the same resource, which is health.
Mm-hmm.
As in, like, whether or not it's really risky for the hunters and whether or not it's really risky for Dracula, both of them are considering their health and the opponent's health. which I think is nice that they're operating on the same resource axis there. Makes it easy to track.
Yeah.
So I want to, I have a few more complaints than I thought I would about this game. One thing that came to my mind constantly is that at its core, the game is like really simple. Mm-hmm. So I think so, there's some really core mechanics that are pretty basic. Things like the way movement works is pretty simple. The way Dracula's hideouts work is pretty basic to understand. There's just all these like filler mechanics and items and stuff like,
oh yeah,
like all the cards, I don't even use 90% of the cards I draw, especially items. Like there's these bullets that you need to play a gun first, like a pistol or a rifle, and then you can play the bullet. But it's like, when I was the hunter, I never used that.
So I think a couple of the ways that this simple game has a lot of extra complexity to it, I have kind of like a list,
right? Yeah,
mentally of things that are added to this game that just serve to make it more complex.
Yeah.
And the first thing is this whole concept of day versus night.
Oh yeah.
So what it does is it adds a lot of complexity without adding much depth. Like, right. The depth that it adds is that Dracula is stronger at night. In combat, and Dracula obtains his event cards at night when hunters try to search.
Right.
But then what it adds in complexity is it modifies like very basic core actions of the game.
Right. And it's a lot of bookkeeping to remember, like, wait, are we in Monday night? Are we in Monday morning? Was that dusk or was that night? Also, just the fact that the word night is used multiple times, either to reference the night phase for the hunters or like Dracula's combat cards that say if it is night, which includes dusk.
Yeah, dusk is differentiated, but it's also night. But yeah,
night is different from night time. I think combat in general in this game is really it's a little too crunchy. Like, all I think right, the so suits are cool.
If we're done talking about day and night, this moves on to another point that I have of complexity, and that is all of these like flow charts that are in part of the gameplay. The flow charts aren't actual flow charts in the rule book, but functionally you deal with a lot of flow charts.
Well, they're if thens.
Yeah.
So like if you supply and if it's nighttime, do this. Else if it's daytime, do this.
Exactly. If you're if it's nighttime and you're in a big city, do this. If it's nighttime and you're in a small city, etc. And then when it comes to combat, it's like if the suit matches, then cancel Dracula. Then cancel Dracula's card, perform the hunter card. If the suit doesn't match Dracula, then Dracula performs. If Dracula canceled the hunter, skip the hunter. If Dracula did not cancel the hunter, activate the hunter card.
Yeah, or like if the hunter ends their turn in a location with an encounter, and if Dracula wants to ambush, then the ambush happens. Or there's a lot of these scenarios where you have to logically plot out what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
It almost would have fit better as a video game in that regard, I feel like. Like, a lot of this stuff could have been automated and saved headspace. You know,
sure.
I think in general, there's a lot of cards that have abilities that just don't come into play, though, or like there's a lot of unnecessary text. And I don't mean this like it's overly verbose. I mean this just that like there doesn't need to be like claws and I'm pretty sure there's like claws in another attack Dracula has that just do 2 damage, or like. I guess I should just say, like, I mean, it feels like there's a lot of filler cards in the event deck, if that makes sense.
Like the event deck or the encounter deck?
Both, actually. Like, a card that doesn't impact the game much, but it's there to provide spacing between other cards. So, like, in the encounter deck, there's an encounter that's just, like, draw 3 encounters, then discard 3 encounters. And while I understand this helps you, like, filter through, I never found a time where I would rather play that than a vampire or something that deals damage or something that protects me.
Right.
And it almost felt like it was there just just to pad out good draws. Or some of the events, like even the one that's like look at the hideout on the third, if it, you play it immediately, elsewise play it or otherwise look at the fifth or sixth hideout, like it felt like there was other stuff to do every time I drew that and couldn't play it on turn one.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and taking a full action to do that, like, I'd rather be walking on the trail or discovering the... I mean, that one's only good if you're totally clueless. And that's another thing that's, like, some cards, you know, there's essentially, like, two phases to the game. And phase one is finding Dracula's trail. Phase two is hunting down Dracula, like, chasing down Dracula and defeating him. Mm-hmm. And some cards in the game are just totally pointless during... either of those phases. Right. So like when you're hot on Dracula's trail and you're chasing him down, the event card that says like reveal the third card in the trail is useless because it's always going to be revealed.
Yeah. And it feels weird when like you have a maximum hand size that's really small because like you're not going to play half of these cards, so they end up just getting cycled back through if, you know, you don't want to hold on to them.
And by the way, yes, speaking of like cycling through card, like survey, doing a lot of searching, not searching, supplying is bad in the end because the game really ramps up after so many turns have passed and you can only take so many turns to supply. It's like if you don't get good stuff after so many supplies, then you're wasting too much time.
Right. It's true that like these huge decks do impact those types of things. Yeah. Like, I don't even think I've seen half the event cards because the game hasn't lasted that long and I haven't wanted to supply enough turns, which, I mean, I guess that adds replay value, but at the same time, like, it feels weird. Like, why are you showing me this huge deck of cards if I'm only going to see, like, 10 of them?
Sure.
Oh, and that gets me to my main point I wanted to make is that there is a huge amount of stuff to front load onto a player that then just, like, barely matters.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I think this is a real problem with some games, especially this one, is that, like, to a new player, they have to read the rule book for everything, and then, like, whenever they draw a card, they have to take into account all the information on it for the first time. So for a weapon, that might be the fact that it's a weapon, the name of it, which is referenced on some other cards, the suits it has, the effect it has, you know, stuff like that. And then remember that they have it in their hand when the time comes. Like, that is kind of okay in a vacuum, but when you get into, like, these huge decks of cards, and you look at just setting up the board for the first time, it feels kind of Herculean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, there's all these tokens in the token pool. There's all these encounter cards that Dracula has and this huge stack of locations, and like it feels like a huge amount of stuff for the first time.
So
that's how I felt.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of content in this game, and it all just feels like small little bites of content that in some cases are just totally unimportant.
Yeah.
In other cases are just not really appealing. I want to talk about how this is a hidden movement game, and in hidden movement games, once you have found the trail, it's very quick to deduce where the person is. I mean, like, just by knowing where they are in the trail and how many spaces they've moved, you can narrow it down to like three locations. And then by finding one more location on the trail, especially in this game, since you can't backtrack, you can pretty much determine exactly where Dracula is after finding two locations on the trail. And if you can force Dracula to say what region he's in, that's also essentially two turns away from finding exactly where Dracula is. So what I'm getting to is that in a game where you only have to find the person once, it feels like that's a huge shift, and getting clues in this game is a big deal. And can make a huge swing in terms of the hunter's chances of finding Dracula. In other hidden movement games, like it's about finding the person multiple times. Like you find them, you track them down, you get them, and then you kind of reset. And then the person goes back to purely gone. And I think part of the fun of a hidden movement game is that whole deduction process. It just seems unfortunate that in such a long game, you only get to do that once.
Right. Well, alternatively, a lot of hidden movement games just end when you find them for the first time. But that lets you play again and reiterate on it. In this game, you can't just play again after you find Dracula. You don't know if you've beaten him.
This game has like an estimated playtime of 2 to 3 hours, I think, on the box. That's a lot for a hidden movement game.
I think
just fundamentally the mechanic is best suited for either like a short game, like you mentioned, where you find them once and then that's it, or a longer game where you have to find them multiple times.
Yeah.
And so, but I guess, this game is part hidden movement and then part this like combat simulator.
Yeah. I don't like combat in this game, by the way.
Well, that's interesting.
Specifically, I don't like it as Dracula.
Okay.
I think there's more choices as a hunter than Dracula.
Hmm.
And despite
the hunters having fewer cards than Dracula.
Right. So I think this goes into the way the angles that the two different factions approach combat. Because Dracula has a pretty straightforward concept. It's try to dig for your mesmerize then fangs so that you can win, or escape without taking too much damage or kill them. Mm-hmm. Or maybe deal damage and then escape. But that means that there's not much of a reason to read the hunter, I guess, because it's either you get your objective off or you don't. And you can either I don't feel like there's enough of a reward in trying to play suboptimally in order to outplay the hunter.
I guess that might be partially because the hunter is just working with the same cards over and over again. So it's you can't deduce what the hunter's about to do.
Yeah.
By what they've played. The only thing you can do is just try and identify what the hunter's goal is going to be for the next card.
Right. The way I have this.
But because each of the hunter's cards, it just seems like each of the hunter's cards do a small incremental advantage for them, that any one of them is good in almost any situation. The only instance where you can get a hard read on what a hunter's card's going to be is if they're in immediate danger of ending the game.
Yeah, for or Dracula. If you're in immediate danger and you think they're going to play a weapon.
Right.
But for the most part, Dracula, your most optimal play every time is to go get the card that lets you search for other cards, because that can also stop one of the hunter's basic combat cards, then mesmerize, then fangs.
Right. In that case, it's interesting for the hunter just to figure out when the Dracula is going to go for that play.
Exactly.
You have chances to cancel the draw or the card that lets you search your deck and the card that lets you mesmerize.
Right. That's why I said I like it more as a hunter than as Dracula.
Yeah.
The way I put it is it's rock, paper, scissors, but Dracula is rewarded for always going rock, then paper, then scissors.
Gotcha. Yeah.
The hunter just gets to decide if they want to beat that at the same time or tie it and move on, or you get the idea.
Right.
I think it's weird, though, that Dracula has this whole deck of cards that only ever comes up in combat.
Yeah.
This is something I feel like there's not a lot of overlap in mechanics. At least for hunters, item cards are relevant during the daytime in that you want to supply them, and some of them are utility.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking about what you want to do, hand management is a thing you have to consider. But Dracula, you've just got these power or these combat cards to the side, and it's like, I don't need to worry about you until I fight, and that's the only time I'll see you.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels wasteful.
I mean, I guess it is kind of necessary because it starts with the mechanic of the suits canceling out Dracula's cards. I mean, I guess it starts by wanting to make an asymmetric combat system and then going to the mechanic of these suits. And then because Dracula's cards only have one suit and the hunter cards have multiple suits, then Dracula needs more cards.
Right.
Rather than having to acquire them and build up a hand of cards like the hunters do. They just always have all the cards, and so that's why they have the deck.
Right, but it's even weird to me that, like, the Dracula events don't give you any sort of combat edge like that.
Like, it would be like, cool if the events could, like, add cards to the deck.
Yeah, because, like, or, Dracula's combat cards options. They exist in, like, a separate space from everything else.
Mm-hmm.
No other part of the game interacts with them directly like that.
Sure.
Yeah. I want to talk about railways, by the way, if you're okay with moving on.
Sure.
I don't get railways, and this is... So, I sort of get railways. So, like... Most of the time, they are faster than roads because you can move, you know, up to 3 white railways or 2 yellow railways usually. But there are a lot of places where this starts to fall apart, I feel like. Where, like, if I believe in this sort of concept, then it makes less sense. So, like, for example, most places that have railways will have at least one railway leaving it that crosses 2 roads. So if you look at, like, Munich in Strasbourg, that crosses 2 roads. There's no way to take a road from one to the other. But then Munich can go to Nuremberg, which has one road connecting them. Strasbourg can go to Zurich, which has one road connecting them. So, like, that would make sense. However, if you move over to the eastern side of Europe over here, the yellow roads more often than not will cover one road distance. So Galați to Bucharest, or Constanța to Bucharest, or Salonica to Sofia. So yellow roads, they are almost always lower numbers, but there's very few times where their value makes a huge difference then.
Gotcha.
Likely you'll get a yellow 2 than a white 2.
Right. So you're saying that... Like, functionally, yellow railways on the map are the exact same as roads in a lot of cases.
Right. Or if you look at Bari to Rome in Naples, this is a triangle that I don't understand why the train goes all the way through. I mean, I guess if you wanted to go from Florence to Naples, you would have to take 2 roads. So maybe that's okay, but then why is there one from Naples to Bari? Because if you want to go Rome to Bari, you can take a road that goes straight there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if there is a yellow 3 in the train tickets.
No, I don't believe there is.
So there's no way to get from Florence to Bari in one turn anyways. So why does the trainway between Bari and Naples exist?
Yeah.
Or why is there no railway from Liverpool to Swansea is another question. There's white railways going to every other city, basically, in England, covering every roadway.
I mean, I get the existence of railways. I don't know, maybe it's based on reality. Maybe they're just actually tracing real railways.
But, like, it feels like there's so many places. There's
more railways in real life.
There's so many, like... Almost like plot holes, but it's like design holes that you can really nitpick about these that I just don't like. Like, I mean, I think it just gets to be like, it almost feels like railway or train tickets exist the way they do as a way to give hunters something to do at nighttime. Because, like, if they're not in a location with an encounter and they're not damaged, which is a good most of the early game and some of the mid game. And they either have all of their items in hand, or they don't want to risk giving Dracula an event. Railways are like the only thing they can do to still do something on their turn, or to reserve a ticket, I mean. You know, so like it gives them an option to do, but I feel like there could have been a better way to do it, because then it feels like either you're forced into taking a train ticket, which can kind of feel bad, that like... The game's forcing you to do this on the turn where you have all these actions available. I mean, it's not forcing you, but there's no reason to do anything else most of the time.
I guess I never really felt while we were playing that train tickets were a bad thing as a hunter.
See,
I was always very happy to have a train ticket and to have the option to move by train.
I'm happy to have a train ticket and I'm happy to have the option, but there's so many times where, like, the fact that, like, maybe half the nighttime turns I had as a hunter, I reserved a train ticket because there was nothing else good to do. Mm-hmm. It just felt like the game was lacking something there.
Hmm.
And I don't know if that's just me or if that's a fault with the game.
Maybe that's just you. I mean,
I kind of don't like being given a list of options and then kind of being told that one is what I should be doing the whole time.
Hmm.
Like, it almost removes agency that it gives me. And like I said, like, I could supply items, but the low hand size made it feel bad to do so.
I would say that this is just like a, I don't know, I'd say that this is like a more of a symptom of the existence of day and night in this game than because that the problem is that it's nighttime and the only good thing to do at night is reserve a train ticket.
That's more of what I was getting at.
And I'm thinking, like, when I think about this game, I'm thinking, like, why is there even this divide? I mean, I get the things that happen because there is this day and night, because Dracula gets better at night. He's stronger in combat, and he has the chance of gaining those event cards from the event deck when you supply at night. But it seems to just add a whole bunch of extra complexity where you don't need it, and then it adds a couple factors of frustration for the hunters.
Exactly.
You know, I don't know. It makes like planning your turn a whole lot more complex, because when you're planning your turn, you have to say, like, well, do I want to move? If so, I got to do it now. And then I got to do something else after that. Rather than, like, it takes your action menu style of gameplay, which this has, which, by the way, I'm not a big fan of action menu games. And then it makes it like chops up the menu and gives it weird context at different points in the game.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm okay with action menu games, but this one, you only do like three of those five or so actions for most of the game.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean by it feels like it's giving me agency and taking it away. By, like, giving me these actions that I literally can't do for early game, like healing or searching through cities to solve encounters, it feels mm-hmm. like I'm wasting my turns by not doing everything I can do. And again, that's, like, obviously that's a thing that comes from my experience. Like, it could just be me, but it feels wrong.
Hmm.
That you give me a list of five actions and only three of them are useful for most of the game. Or usable, I mean.
So,
does that make sense?
That makes sense. It just feels bad, man.
Yeah. I think that's my experience playing this game in a nutshell.
I like hidden movement games. A concept, and this game was pretty fun in those movements when, like, hidden movement was the focus, like when the hunters are just starting to get the first hints at where the trail might be. That seems to be like the most interesting part of the game to me.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just, unfortunately, in this game, it's just over too quickly, and then it becomes kind of a slog.
This, I feel like I would be interested in trying to, like, piece together how to salvage that core gameplay, or, like, how to house rule around it. Mm-hmm. Kind of like how people try to do, you know, fixed Clue, where it's Clue, but, you know, removing the parts that make it a slog to go through, or that are that clash with the rest of the game. You know, how can you preserve this hidden movement core that I really like? Like, the whole hideout mechanic and moving along the trail, that's fun to me,
mm-hmm.
but while eschewing the fat.
And maybe that's something we just leave with the listeners. Maybe you consider how you would attack that roadblock that we have encountered ourselves in playing this game.
Yeah.
Although I think overall I wouldn't mind playing this game a couple more times just to... Because, I mean, when I got my shot at the Dracula, I did a pretty poor job at being evasive. And it didn't take long for hunters to find my trail. And after that, I tried to escape, but I just could not.
Yeah, I think...
And I also never used any of my powers. I wouldn't mind playing again as Dracula just to give that another go.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind trying to play better knowing what I know now about just, like, general strategy or ideas. Mm-hmm. But it's not something I would pick over other games in my collection for just, you know, hey, you want to play a game.
Mm-hmm.
Similar game, so, though. Oh, wait.
Similar games. On? Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say Mr. Jack is a really good hidden movement game for two players only, but that does a really cool thing where you can still kind of lose the criminal Jack the Ripper if you catch them and they play well.
Mm-hmm. I was gonna say, well, in that case it's at least also easy because it's 1v1, so there's not like four people that can cover your four possible exit routes.
Yeah. And
pick up which one you went with. I also think that there's another game called Stop Thief, which is a hidden movement game, but the hidden mover is controlled by an AI on mm-hmm. your on an app on your phone. And it's a competitive game where every player is trying to track down where the thief is in a large map.
Right. I want to bring up a game called Scotland Yard that I haven't played myself, but from what I understand is like pretty similar to sort of the road and railway system that this game, Fury of Dracula, has, but the criminal also uses it. Yeah.
All right. So those are the similar games, and that means that we are at the end of our episode. I guess I want to, before we go into plugs, I want to thank the listeners for, or the listener for requesting this game. I hadn't heard of it before now, and I'm pretty glad that I played it. I think there's a lot of interesting things that happened in the game when I played it.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely glad again, that I played
it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing it at least one or two more times.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's go into the end of the game, or end of the episode plugs, because that has been our episode on Fury of Dracula. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
If you'd like, you can go to social media and follow us on Facebook and Twitter at BG Bros Cast, where we put out
like teasers, cool and discussions. Teasers and,
yeah, exactly. You can talk with us, chat with us there. That's BG Bros Cast on Facebook and Twitter. You can go to our website, bgbcast.com, to find all our episodes where we have them all tagged. You can look through the episode, see if we talked about another game that you like, and hear us talk about it. If you don't see any games tagged that you like that you think we should check out, hit us up on Facebook or Twitter and give us that suggestion. We'll check it out. You can find a link to our TeePublic store on our website, or you can go directly there. That's teepublic.com/user/BGBcast. That's where you can get our cool, cool merch with our podcast logo on it. You could wear it, rep it. That's it for BG Bros plugs. So let's go to Matt plugs.
I stream on twitch.tv/twack. That is twitch.tv/twak. I stream from usually from like 10 or 11 a.m. Central Time to about 2 or 3 p.m. Central Time. And I play mainly competitive games and roguelites. I've recently started a Metroidvania game called Momodora. And I also speedrun a game called Hob, so that's pretty cool. And also, I write blog posts/articles about mainly game design on the BG Bros website, the BGB Cast website, I mean. And I should have a new article going up this weekend about a really niche subsection of game design, specifically video game design, that I think might be pretty interesting.
All right, very cool. And that will conclude our episode. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
See ya.